Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening. We're going to start the meeting, although it's 5 minutes late. Welcome to you all. And we've got, just to make the numbers up, but they're not actually on the committees, Councillor Aidan Godfrey and Councillor Louise Nixon. They're making the numbers up. We are quorate, though, I'm told. That's what we were told at the last planning meeting, weren't it, Chair?
Yes.
We are quorate. Okay, then. The minutes start with the agenda, because I want to give you plenty of time to partake of the festive, the drinks and the... There's wine, if you want wine, there's apple juice and there's coffee outside, of course. And there's a selection of mince pies, because we used to have testing. We used to bring all different ones. The co-op was always the best. And there is a box of co-op mince pies there. So I'm not sort of, you know, pumping it, but the co-op is the best. Right, well, we'll make a start. I've signed the minutes. The minutes of the last meeting were published in the council website, and I've already signed up a set. Right, are there apologies?
Yes, Chairman. Apologies from Councillors Gareth Jones, Chris Barron, and Philip Leeson.
Oh, no, there's not.
Oh, yes, there is.
But we know where one of them is. Oh, no, they're not. Right, public question time?
That's nil.
Councillor session?
That's nil.
Members' item?
That's nil.
And called in item?
And there are none.
And we come to the first item, which is item 7, the new local plan update. And this is it John? It's going to be Alex. And of course, as I indicated earlier, I brought my copies. Hang on a minute. Hello, Mark. We're just about to start. Okay. So I'm just calling the first item. And I've brought my copies of the local plan, in case people want to route through them looking for anything. But it's mainly now down to Alex. All right, and welcome, Alex.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. So, good evening, everyone. As you can see, the report starts on page 3 of your agenda, and the main focus is to provide you with an update on the new local plan, where we've got to so far. So, this is a statutory requirement of the council to prepare a local plan. You'll be aware that we've already got an adopted plan, which covers the period 2011 to 2031. The new local plan will cover the period 2020 to 2040. And we started work on this back in July 2017. That's when the work commenced. And since then, as you can see in the report, there have been a number of consultation exercises that have taken place, and various evidence-based reports that are being prepared. The most recent of which was the issues and options stage, that was in February through to April 2020, and a series of evidence-based documents that underpin that local plan consultation. So we're now in the period between issues and options and preferred options, and there's a number of evidence-based bits of work that are happening at the moment behind the scenes to underpin and support the preferred option. We've also had an opportunity to look at the timetable for the local plan, and that went through Cabinet and was published in the middle of November, setting out the timetable so that that provides certainty to the communities and to the developers about when we're going to be going out with our preferred option, and that will be in June and July next year. So the report also contains information about the national policy context, which has changed fairly significantly since we went out with our issues and options document. And also we've had an opportunity to update the monitoring information that we have for the borough that we have to do on an annual basis. So I can just let you know that in the next week or so, we'll be putting onto our website the authority monitoring report, the infrastructure funding statement, and also the brownfield land register. on an annual basis. We have to do as part of our requirements meeting, meeting national legislation. So, as I say, the next stage is the preferred options stage, and that will need to reflect the changes in national policy that have taken place. So mainly that's a new national planning policy framework that was published in July this year. There's also been some consultations, some changes in terms of the business development rights, what can happen within town centres and commercial areas, and the planning white paper was also published last year. And yes, most recently the Environment Act that was published last, I think it was. And the Environment Act provides us with a 2-year window to be able to prepare for biodiversity net gain, which, and so all development needs to provide a 10% biodiversity net gain by November 2023. So that's my report, and I think that's covered most of the key elements. And obviously includes the timetable where we're looking to adopt the plan by October 2024. We've got the financial resources committed to be able to push forward with that with the process, and also the timetable as set out. So that's my report. Happy to take questions if there are any.
All right. And
back to you.
Thank you. Right. D.
Yeah, just clarification really on point 5.5. You've got submission of the proposed new plan and then examination. Shouldn't examination come first? Or can you just explain that?
Yeah, sure, no problem. This is a process that's laid out in the regulations of what we have to do at each stage of the local plan. The preferred option is coming next year, and that's an opportunity for us to say to the community, this is what we think should be in the local plan. What are your thoughts? And we'll get feedback on policies, potential allocations, proposals,
and the September bit.
Yeah. What then happens is that we need to consider those representations, and we also need to update our evidence base. Because by the time we get to the publication stage, that's when we will take the plan to council and say, here is the plan that we want to adopt as an authority, and here's the full suite of evidence base that sits underneath it to justify it. So as far as we're concerned as a council, this is the plan that we want to bring into effect. What will then happen is that we go out for seeking representations on that plan, which is the publication stage, and then any representations that we receive, we then put those representations together with the evidence base and the plan that we want to have adopted, we put it into a bundle and we submit it to the planning inspectorate. We say, this is what we want to do, please can you test this and let us know whether this is sound, whether this is robust or not. That would then give the people who have made representations an opportunity to sit in front of an inspector and go through the plan and go through the requirements of the plan to make sure that it actually is fit for purpose, fit for being adopted. That's the examination process. What will happen at the end of the examination process is the inspector will issue a report to us, and the inspector will generally say, put in main modifications, some minor modifications, and will make a recommendation about what should then happen to the plan, which, all being well, will be, you can go ahead and you can adopt this plan, provided you implement these main recommendations and these main modifications. So what we would then do is we will report back to full council the inspector's report, the plan, scan the modifications that have been made, and we'll then ask the council to bring it in to be adopted. So that's the process. There's one final little step that isn't in this timetable, but that's once it's adopted, there's then a 6-week window for people to anyone who still isn't happy to make a judicial review of the plan. And then after that, the plan comes into effect. So that's the process, and I hope that that sort of provides you with an explanation of why the steps are the way that they are, and what happens at each one.
Right. Mrs. Barron.
Thank you. Alex, 3.3, Cannock Chase Special Area for Conservation. Is there actually a map on that to see how it's divided up, whether it's Staffordshire or South Staffs or...?
So there is a... I can provide a map showing where the Special Area of Conservation is.
Yeah, OK.
We are in a partnership. The local authority is in a partnership, and the partnership oversees the Cannock Chase Special Area of Conservation. But it sits within the Cannock Chase Area of Outstanding Natural Beauty. That's where it is.
Yeah.
And the Cannock Chase Area of Outstanding Natural Beauty is a larger designation. The Special Area of Conservation is an internationally important site, and it's split up into 4 or 5 different component land areas, but it sits within the Cannock Chase Area of Outstanding Natural Beauty. And so the reason that we're part of this partnership alongside our other councils, that being Cannock Chase, South Staffordshire, Lichfield, East Staffordshire, and some of the Black Country authorities, is because the impact of visitors going to the chase needs to be mitigated.
Yeah.
And so what we need to do is we need to collect funds when developers build houses in order to then deliver mitigation projects to protect the Cannock Chase site. So that's what I said. So if you'd find it useful for me to send around a link, I can send you by Andy.
Yes,
please. Oh,
yeah.
So it's obvious that Council Mrs. Barron won't like it. Right. Okay. All right. Francis, you put
it. Thank you, Chair. Can I just add to what Alex has said, which he won't be surprised at, but actually what he should be saying here is referring to Cannock Chase Area of Outstanding Natural Beauty and the SAG, because the AONB is an area of national landscape importance. It carries the same weight as national parks, which we tend to fail to forget in this county. And there are internationally important species right across the chase, not just in the special area of conservation. You know, the bird population does not stick to the Sacca and stick to Brockton Coppice. They fly across the chase.
Mm.
So if I had had a chance to do it, and I bring him up all the time on this, but actually it's the ALNB that is equally important, and we have 5 authorities affected there that we need to consult. I think it's 5, isn't it? Maybe 6. It could be 6, because it actually includes Walsall, interestingly.
Yeah.
Walsall, Lichfield, Cannock, County Council, Stafford, South Staffs.
Right.
So even though it's part of it is in our patch, we have widespread involvement with other authorities here.
Right, okay then. Councillor Cross?
Sorry.
Yeah, you mentioned the new Environment Act here. Will our new plan include things like all the green issues, you know, outside electrical charging points, the what they call them on the roofs?
So you'll get an opportunity to see the full package, as it were, in the the new year, which will include all of the policies that we have acquired to include from the National Planning Policy Framework, including, as you say, the net zero, the biodiversity net gain, and all those policies that are a requirement for to be included in the new plans. And on top of that, we also need to test those policies in terms of their viability. So we need to look at the strength of the property market in the borough as of now, and then see what the infrastructure costs would be in terms of delivering those policies and also the proposals, so that we can then be confident. It all feeds into the sort of the deliverability of the policy. There's no point in having a policy which then can't be delivered. So it's important to have that cross check in terms of the viability side of things. And so that work you will see at the preferred option stage as well, so that you can have the confidence that the policies can actually come through.
Thank you.
All right, I've got Mark Winnington.
Thank you, Chair. A couple of points from me, interest or clarification, whatever you want to call it. First of all, it's quite bizarre that we're talking about the new local plan 2020 to 2040 when we're already at 2021 going to 2022. So we've lost 2 years out of the 10 straight away. On what Brian said about the environmental issues such as charging points, yes, we should ask that the developers whether it affects the viability of the scheme, but that shouldn't be the only reason we shouldn't be doing this, because developers, in my experience, will always say that they can't afford a scheme with the extras on. So I think we've got to be fairly harsh on that rather than just sort of bowing down and saying, yes, Mr. Developer, I agree with you, it's going to cost you £50 a house. And also make sure we get the ducting in place, because that's something that irritates me, that you get a new house and then no ducting for any services. Well, particularly to fast forward about. What I'm really concerned about, and it goes back to my original point about it being 2020 to 2040, apologies, I said 8 years, it's 18 years. A lot's changed in the last 2 or 3 years, surprisingly. People's aspirations for housing have changed. People now want to live in a community, have some green space, not be in flats or high-rise flats with families. How are we going to address those issues? Do we add things into the plan, or do we go out again and sort of do a minor consultation? Because I think as we go forward, we need to get houses that are fit for the future, post-pandemic, which hopefully we'll get to at some point. And people want different things. They don't want to live in the same sort of houses they did 2 years ago, not 3 years ago. And then my final point really is that we talk about the urban environment. We've got the Stafford Gateway, now we've got the Spa finished. There's the Eastgate project. Again, is that fit for purpose? Do we want more office space in the middle of town or more residential? But you would expect me to say this as a rural councillor, a farmer, someone who lives in the country. A lot of villages are dying because local people can't afford to live in them anymore. And this is sort of, I get people mentioning this all the time. What's really irritating for me is, particularly as a farmer and knowing other farmers, that agricultural land, which is no building land, land with buildings on, farmsteads, there's less farmsteads about. There's a lot of redundant farmsteads with a lot of space on them, and that's not allowed to be classed as brownfield sites. Now, in the country, we've got a lot of brownfield sites where we can put retired farmers, we can put young farmers. What are we doing in terms of looking at those? And I'm sure Frances has got a view on this with her pedigree as well.
Well, that's nice.
Yes, I was thinking that was very nice for him to say that before he drops you in it. Would you like to answer that bit?
It's D as well.
Sorry. D, you want to come in?
Thank you, yeah. It goes with what Mark said, to be quite honest. It's about, it's really important to have affordable housing, particularly across the whole borough, because, Mark's mentioned the farm workers. Across the whole borough, the housing that's gone up is very, very nice, but it's very, very expensive. So it's about having, having that built in. As you say, people's priorities have changed enormously, and that's across the board from, socioeconomic group 5 to 1. So it's really important that it keeps up to date with that. And there is affordable housing for people. Mark needs, he'll need employees. So,
And the retired people,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, retired as well.
Right.
Okay, thank you. So just to be clear that we're not losing anything in terms of we've got a local plan at the moment that's in place that goes through to 2031, so there is a crossover between the two plans. And we do monitor on a yearly basis the number of houses that we've completed and the amount of affordable housing and how we're matching up in terms of the adopted plan. And that will continue as we develop and then adopt our new plan. It's important that you're right, that planning is always changing, and that's what makes it an exciting profession. Yeah. Because you're always on your toes, seeing what new national policy is coming through, what's happening with society, and the changes happening there. And so, absolutely, the new plan will take on board all that we've learned over the last couple of years and reflect that, as well as obviously what's happening at the national level and the local level. Regarding affordable housing, yes, I spoke earlier about the viability work that's being done to support the policies, and affordable housing is a key element of that work, because we need to feed in what level of affordable housing we're looking to achieve through the plan period, how much that will cost, and then what are the implications on other infrastructure to get the balance so that we can be confident that the plan will deliver. So again, affordable housing would be included in that. The definition of brownfield land and greenfield land is set at the national level rather than at a local level, so that's why we need to adhere to what's set at the national level in terms of the rural areas as well as the urban areas. But you're right, it's a changing environment, and we will do the best that we can to actually reflect that in our local plan, but also try and future-proof it as well by anticipating what may be happening next. And that's the advantage of actually having the consultation processes, so that we can actually talk to others across the industry, across the communities, beyond this building, to make sure that we've considered absolutely everything. So when we get to the promulgation stage, that the plan is exactly what needs to be delivered. So I think that covers most of the questions that you raised.
All right, I'm going to stick at the moment with Councillor Winnington, because he's put his hand up. Obviously, he's got a come back question, and then I'll go to D, and then I'll cross over to Marnie, because they were asking the questions that started this bit of the conversation. All right.
Thank you, Chairman. I did put my hand up.
Yes, I realise that.
No,
but
I meant
let's sort out. Look, now, let's be fair.
No,
we are honoured by having Councillor Winnington here.
Well, that is a fair point. Chairman.
So while he's having a chance, give him a chance. Go on then, Mark. Ask what follow up one.
Thank you, Chair, for your kind words. It's really this statement that always gets thrown into the pot, that it's national guidance on brownfields and greenfield land. I'm not talking about using greenfield land. What I'm saying is that within our policies there must be some flexibility to ensure that where this redundant, unusable agricultural land, and I can take it 4 or 5 places where there are, that should be looked at as some sort of an exception site, which is easily almost a prior development in that sort of situation. Because, as I say, what we're finding in the countryside is that the people are retiring from, and the government are asking people to retire from farming, so that it allows younger people into it. Where there's retired people and where there's young people who want to work in the countryside, who are going to take advantage of the new world in terms of agriculture, 5G and all the different sorts of agrotech, to make sure that we as a country provide more food for our residents, that we should be not flexible but just explore the brownfield sites and think, is there a way we can use them that's sustainable, that's economic, because obviously there's lots of room around some of these sites, and that can be used, because I do feel that it's so important as we go forward for the next 2050, that we take account of this. So sorry to bang on about it.
That's absolutely right. And the current plan includes policies in terms of reuse of rural buildings and those types of schemes, and also the balance in terms of housing and employment use. And those policies will continue through the new plan. So you'll be able to see those draft policies.
Yeah.
To make sure that they're fit for purpose,
yep.
And they're doing the best that they can in order to be able to maintain that environment.
Again, apologies, Chair, but if you've got an agricultural site that's got clear span buildings which are something like 2,000 square foot, you can't turn them into a barking position. You've probably looked at what we do as we go forward to some of these bigger sites. Where the small brick and tile buildings, fantastic. And there's so many people who live in those and enjoy living in them, but there are sites which can't be developed because of the size of them, because of the structure. So I'll leave to that.
Right, okay. Is this all to do with farming?
Yeah,
all right.
Well, it's both, yeah. And it's about the formula. I know there's a set formula for what's classed as affordable housing, but given the price of housing, it's way out of young professionals. They come out of university, so they've got to pay that back, and then they're starting their career. They just can't afford what is classed as affordable housing. It's way out of their reach. So people that work for Mark or in the farming particularly, again, it's way out. They can't afford to buy. So it's what's going to be there to provide housing and accommodation for those people that is way out of their price bracket now.
Okay, so there's a couple of answers to that. There's the agricultural workers dwelling policy that we've also got that we'll be looking at as part of the new plan. But the government has recognised the point you make as well in terms of a new policy that's come out in the last year or so called First Homes. And so therefore, part of the affordable housing element that we need to include in our new plan is for first homes. So it's exactly the point you just made, in order to provide those people with the first opportunity to get onto the housing ladder. So there'll be a particular percentage that's set at the national level that we need to require builders to deliver as part of first homes to meet exactly that requirement.
Right, now we're going to go to Councillor Beattie, because she's indicated you want to speak on this particular point.
Yeah, thanks, Chairman. I was just picking up on Mark's point about 5G. One of the things that, again, I've asked Alex to look at is the changes that are likely to take place in the population that lives in the villages, because I think in the years to come we're going to find that it's not a commuting population to the extent it has been over the last 40-50 years. Because we have this key service village policy based on provision of services, we tend to force people out of the small villages, which is where you get the very expensive houses in the hamlets. But 5G is going to make a big difference, because
people are going to work from home, and you're going to be able to work from home in the rural area because we're looking at the universal coverage in the very near future. They'll be working through the day from home, and we need to provide for the smaller villages, if need be, to have a little local shop for people to go and do their shopping in during the day, or whatever it may be, or for the mobile library to come to the village hall. It's going to be a very different world in the village communities from what we're used to now. And we've been wedded to the key service village policy, and that you can't have anything but development in your key service villages with village boundaries and so forth. For donkey's years, and it needs to change, because we are seeing small villages and hamlets that are simply full of old people, and as Dee says, the house prices are going to go up, and it's an uncomfortable future for the rural economy if we don't get it right. But at the end of the day, I think the 5G is going to make the difference. People are going to be working in those villages at all levels of work ability, as it were.
Right, thank you for that. Right, Marnie.
As Mark's already said, it is understandably we are behind. It is a little frustrating in the respect that we obviously can't get a few things sewn up quicker, particularly the designs and layouts of some of these estates that we're seeing popping up all over Stafford. The housing designs and layouts that developers are currently using as a blueprint to squash as many properties as possible in as poor a design state as possible is something that I'm hoping we're going to be able to address within this. Is that something we're going to be able to do? We're going to be able to look at better designs.
So again, the government earlier this year produced what's called the National Model Design Code. They consulted on it beforehand, and then it was issued in July, and that sits alongside the National Planning Policy Framework. And that National Model Design Code sets out key principles as what has to happen across the country. So every new local plan that is adopted now needs to reflect those National Model Design Codes and that framework. So yes, the government is strengthening the opportunity that we have to be able to influence and direct to those design codes as planning applications are considered going forward. There's also the opportunity that's given to provide some local design codes through local plan as well. Now, at the moment, we've got a local plan policy, N1, which is the design policy, so that provides the current situation. But there is that opportunity to apply the National Model Design Code as well from here on in, and consider local design codes as well.
Can I bring up I know that some of these things are things that crop up as we're going along, and we find that there are changes that we would like to have made, and some of them are things that we would like to see immediately done and are not physically possible. But we're having so many problems on some of these estates already due to the way that they're laid out. It would be nice to be able to put our own style into this. I think we've already seen enough of the things that we've got at the moment, and that in some areas we're having developers coming back having already put a design in, accepted, and then they're coming back trying to cram another 100 houses on a site that was beautifully designed and now is going to look exactly the same as every other site. So is that something else that we can try and prevent? I mean, there must be little ways that we can make some subtle changes that are going to future-proof.
Can I just say something? I think the chairman of the planning committee sitting next to you.
I know.
Well,
I know.
That should have been, I think, that may have been a question to that committee. Right. Now, do you think you can answer it, Francis? Or Alex?
My first answer would be that the government's new design code actually encourages local authorities to produce their own design code underneath the national one. And I'd certainly hope that that's what we do. And the second point I've completely forgotten on account of my age.
No, it's okay. In terms of local design codes, we do need to consider where they're applied, how they're applied, over what geographical area is most appropriate for them to be applied, and obviously take into account the resource implications of doing these, following the framework and doing these design codes, because it is pretty resource intensive doing these local design codes. So we need to make sure that when we do them, they're done in the most effective way. Because, as I say, there are resource implications on doing updates. It takes us forward from where we are at the moment, which is at the moment we've got a design scheme, country planning document, and we've got a policy in the local plan, and we've got what's in the national planning policy framework. But things are moving forward now, and the government most recently has actually talked about the fact that there could be a change in terms of, there's been a lot of focus on housing numbers and housing delivery and local authorities being required to hit a certain number of houses and us being penalised if we don't. And so that's been a real driver over the last 5 or 6 years. And the government is now talking about, hang on a minute, there are other more important things than just hitting a number of houses that are completed. And design is a key point that's being made. So I'm expecting to see some more meat on the bones in terms of those statements that have been coming out through the new Department for Levelling Up Housing and Communities into the new year as the Levelling Up White Paper is published. And then we get a bit more information in terms of what's going to come through the planning reforms as well. So I'll just say, bear with us. We are keeping a close eye on it and making sure that we do reflect those quite quick changes that are coming through in the local plan. And we do need to obviously be light on our feet in terms of this, because it is moving forward quite quickly.
Can I just...
Yeah, go on.
So is there anything we're going to be able to do as an authority to obviously stop some of these developers from trying to push forward lots of developments, knowing that there's going to be design changes, knowing that we're looking at our designs, and with them having a tendency of buying property, putting something through, and then sitting on it for a few years, how do we address that if our plans have changed and our designs have changed, yet they've already had permission and they've been sitting on it? Can we then go back and readdress those plans to make them sit?
No, any sort of...
Can I just go on that particular point through you, Chairman? There are standards set, and one of the things we are looking at are the building standards. In our current local plan, we have set the basic... I suppose it's the basic level of design standard, which was the, what was it, housing, better building housing, I can't remember what the new one's called, but there's one for industrial buildings, that's the BREEAM standard, and then there's one for housing. And what I pushed for very hard at the last local plan was to have the, if you like, the silver standard, if not the gold standard. And I think we should be trying for that in this local plan, and no doubt we'll be beaten down by inspectors and so on, but let's try for it. It's really difficult because the volume builders have got a stranglehold on the market. One of the very interesting things that came out of the consultation, the Building Better Britain, or whatever it was called, consultation, was that we, whoever it may be, local authorities, should be trying to encourage more local builders to take some of the development off the big volume builders, because they tend to build more, I was going to say, not necessarily better, but more sympathetically. I mean, if you look at some of the local the developments by local builders around Stafford and Stone and so forth, you've got some really good examples where local builders and architects have actually designed small-scale settlements, but they just there's a stranglehold by the big developers that has stopped that market, and it's up to government to open it up again, I think.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, any planning consent that's being given, you can't do anything about that. That's done and dusted, and the developer would have their development window in order to be able to implement those permissions. So it's only planning permissions that we're looking at in the future that can reflect what you're asking for.
So. Just clarify, if the example that I've given where a developer had put in planning permission, say, for 100 houses with large gardens, and then come back 2 years later after just beginning to build, wanting to build another 250 houses on that same plot, but we passed this already in that time, does that mean that then our new local plans would then be looked at, as opposed to the old one that was looked at when they originally put in their planning application, which was approved? I'm not sure if I'm making myself clear.
No, you are making absolute sense. The case officer, when they're looking at, say, planning application, needs to take into account the current national policy approach, the National Model Design Code, and the local plan that's been adopted at that time and the policies in it. So if you're in a scenario where the old plan allowed X amount and then a new plan came into effect and then a new planning application was submitted for a lot more housing, then clearly it would have to look at that new application in the context of the latest position, not as it was when the precedent was first set, as it were, previously.
Right, I'm going to stop you there a moment.
Thank you.
John, are you happy with what's being said? Or do you want to add anything?
What Alex has said is correct. You do have to take into account the local plan, neighbourhood plans, and guidance at that point in time. So if your original permission is approved under the current local plan, and in the meantime we've adopted a new local plan, then yes, you would consider that, rather than the current one. The difficulty comes if we're partway towards adoption and what weight a new plan has. And obviously there's going to be a scenario where any time, probably after we publish the... Alex, what's your date for?
Yes, when we publish in July 2023, so before July 2023, that will be when the plans will go, hey, this is the plan we want to have. At that point, when it has more weight.
You've got preferred options, but stay beyond that is the actual publication.
That's right.
So from that point onwards, the new plan starts to have some weight, and it will gain that as it goes through the process. It's not going to get full weight until we've got an inspector's report and the council has considered how they're going to modify it and adopt it. So you're going to be for a while in a stage where you're between two things.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Right, okay, we'll go back now to I've got Brian Cross again. I'm not saying that's not being rude, so it's your turn again, Brian.
It's going back to what something Mark said earlier about the villagers dying. I can remember a few years ago, Francis took us out visiting various areas, and one of them was, I think, is it rural exception sites, where a village could provide land and make an application for housing to be built on that, for either social housing or low cost. And that's probably in our current plan, but perhaps the villagers need to be made more aware of the fact that they can provide land for these rural exclusion sites, which gives an opportunity for younger people to either rent or buy housing that's provided on them.
Okay, Alex, all right on that?
Yes, okay. There's absolutely a role for parishes to engage with.
Parish councils, it would be, wouldn't it?
Yes, either through the neighbourhood planning process or to link forward land as rural exception sites. But obviously, it requires engagement between the parish and the landowner and also with the housing association as well to make sure
there's probably a lot of the parishes aren't aware of that. You know.
Right.
It's probably hidden some small clause in the plan, and perhaps you know.
Well, I'm thinking maybe at the next parish forum, it should be emphasised that this could be done. You know, just to.
Can I just add something to that, Chair?
Yeah.
When we did the last plan, the Red Blob plan, we decided, and Alex will correct me, but we chose our key villages, and then we left the rest to be decided by the village communities themselves, which became a fertile ground for developers to take over and say, oh, you haven't got any plans in place for your villages, we'll go and build here and we'll go and build there and so on. That's not going to happen this time. And perhaps Alex would explain it much better than I would. Basically, there will be a plan for individual villages through the whole of the borough, and we won't leave it to village communities to make decisions. I think the feeling then was that neighbourhood plans were going to be the answer to everything, the God's gift to everything, and of course they weren't, because they're expensive, they're time consuming, and we've got five of them across the, is it five or six across the whole of the borough after this length of time. So I think it's going to be an opportunity for those who live in the rural area to make an input to this local plan, because it will have some meaning for the smaller villages.
Yes, that's absolutely right. When we went out with issues and options, we identified a settlement hierarchy, and so every settlement that's got more 50 or more houses was identified within that hierarchy. And what we're now doing is we're preparing the preferred option to reflect that hierarchy in order to be able to provide the communities with that certainty about where development will and will not be acceptable. And so therefore that will mean that we avoid the situation that we experienced before.
But it doesn't resolve the problem for the smaller villages, less than 50 houses, which is going to continue to be a very vexed question.
I have to say that in the past, the big developers have blocked a lot of local development. I mean, an example is Shirleywich, where there's a piece of ground in Shirleywich and it stood empty for the past 30 odd years, and that was blocked on a local plan by the big developers, saying we can do, we can build houses in this area but not actually on that piece of ground. So that piece of land still stands vacant in Shirleywich. Okay, well, now we'll turn to Mark Winnington, and then I'm going to move on. So this is the last one on this.
Apologies for what I'm going to say before I say it. I don't know about other members around the table, but I'm starting to get a lot of noise from residents about the development around Stafford. The amount of development, the type of development, the infrastructure's starting to creak, and I think the A34 next year people will find what it really is like to be creaking. Now, strategically, and it's one for Francis obviously, we've got to be really careful with this next plan to ensure that we don't basically overload Stafford and Stafford's infrastructure. We need development, we need growth in the economy, but we also need to be able to move around in whatever form of vehicle we're driving around in or sitting in at the time. And the question really is given that there's so much development around Stafford, and even South Staff's now sort of sticking its nose into Stafford's business, and we wanted to put 5,000 houses at Bassett and around that sort of area.
I think it's 500.
500, is it? That's 500 too many. On the infrastructure at the moment. Could we have clarification? Was it 500 or 5,000?
Well, at the moment, in their local plan, the consultation finished yesterday, it's 168 new houses immediately south of Wildwood, adjacent to the A34 Kazet Road. Now, that's an area of land that previously was subject to a planning application by Gladmans. From memory, it was refused by South Staffordshire Council. It went to appeal, and the appeal was lost by Gladmans as well. However, now South Staffordshire Council have allocated that land as a proposal in their preferred option, and the consultation has just finished. And we've submitted quite a robust response to South Staffs about our concerns regarding that land, and directly asking them to deallocate it. Okay, so we haven't just said, "Oh, we're not happy about the infrastructure, and we're not happy about." We said we want this to be deallocated. So they're very clear about our position.
Okay. So sorry to go off a diversion. So really, what I'm saying is, in terms of the infrastructure, go to 2040. Will that be sort of examined to make sure that Stafford can take any more big developments? And then the second one is, on the back of that, we've got the development at Swinnerton, which is the Three Brooks, whatever it's
Meesbrook.
Called, Meesbrook development. Will there be some more flesh on the bones about what we think will happen as we go forward with that? Because 2040 is obviously a good way away, and a lot will happen in that time.
Okay, so as
Thank
I said, there's a lot of evidence-based work that's been done between issues and options, and as we head toward preferred options, and that includes looking at infrastructure, engaging with the county council in terms of education, transport, utilities, and looking at ecology, landscape, and heritage. So that full suite of information will be prepared and made available at preferred options, together with a sustainability appraisal and the viability work. When we went out with issues and options, and you're right, we identified not just that Meesbrook concept, but we also identified a number of other garden community options as well at the issues and options stage, and we received quite a range of comments back on those individually, but also as a concept. And so the next opportunity we will get to see what people think will be when we go out with our preferred option. So the council needs to make a decision about what is in its preferred option in terms of the development strategy, and then with the solar science, and also make a decision in terms of a garden community option or not. And so the public will have the opportunity in June or July next year to see what we have to say and then to provide their comments.
Right, now Councillor Mr Jenny Barron wants to come in because her ward is touched on by this South Staffordshire proposal.
Yes, I was going to, thank you Chair, I was going to ask to tell you later about it, but that was the opportunity. You went back to Gladman. That was fought very hard by myself, Councillor Barron, Leigh Barron, and it wasn't in their local
I think you got a shout at him.
Yeah, wasn't in the, can you hear me?
Yes.
It wasn't in their local plan, so we managed to get that stopped. A lot of complaints about that. This one is a consultation, isn't it, to put it in the local plan?
Correct.
Nobody knew about it. We picked it up from the newsletter. We've also worked again very hard delivering hundreds of leaflets around the area. right up till last night at 5 o'clock, we were getting numerous calls, can we help? They couldn't get on the website. It was really bad to go through from one link to another. And it's as, almost like they were making it difficult for you, putting it out this time of the year, exactly the same time as they did Gladman, so people want to sweep it under the carpet for Christmas. So I want to say as well, thank you very much to Councillor Francis Beattie and to you, Alex, for your very extensive objection report to South Staffs. We do hope that it will go to the next level. I know there's various stages now it's got to go through, isn't it? So we've just got to now wait and take everyone now. What's the next stage it goes to?
Okay.
Okay.
Go on, carry on. Answer the question. Answer the comment.
Okay. So, just to be fair to colleagues in South Staffordshire, they're currently going through a local plan process.
Yeah.
They did consult on this previously in 2019 as part of their local plan process, and we responded at that point and said, we've got concerns about this and flagged up the issues that we had concerns with, and we sent that response through. They've now come out with their preferred option and they've kept it in. So we've pushed back harder this time by not just saying we've got some serious concerns and this is what they are, but also we've asked them to take it out of their plan. So we can be, we've been really clear.
Mm.
The next step is that they will go to publication stage. So they've got to make a decision now whether they stick to it and keep the proposed allocation in their plan and go out at publication stage, or whether they withdraw it based on the representations that they've received of the preferred option. So we'll need to wait to see whether they include it in their publication document. If they do, then we as a council then need to make a decision about whether we continue to object on it, and also whether we're prepared to turn up to examination with evidence to argue why it should be withdrawn and argue it in front of an inspector. So that's the next step. But obviously we need to see what's in their plan first. Now, I experience similar criticisms when we go out with our plan in terms of consultation. However much you try to get a website working, it can sometimes not be 100% foolproof. However, there are a range of opportunities for people to be able to make representations, not just through the website, but sending emails sending in letters, etc. But it's not about the number of representations that are received, it's about the issues that are raised. So it's not about, oh well, we only got 300 submitted, so therefore we've lost, because we didn't submit 350 responses and it's still in there. Just one response raising significant planning issues can change the direction of what policy does in a plan and what a proposal says. So please rest assured that, you know, our representation and others that have been submitted will carry considerations as part of the process. But I'd just like to say thank you for all your efforts in terms of, you know, rallying the residents in that area of Stafford to submit representations and actually pushing through to get them submitted as well. Talking to South Staffs last night, they had over 1,000 responses, representations made to the preferred option, which they're now obviously going to have to very carefully consider each and every one, and then report back to their council when they get to the publication stage to see what decisions they take. But we just have to wait now and prepare for what may come next.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are there's a lot of very angry people about this plan.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, that's John.
Thank you, Chair.
Now, Marnie, do you want to come in on
yes,
something?
I wanted to express my thanks as well, and that extends to Anne for everything that you guys have done. I know it's a lot of hard work, and it was a very detailed response that you gave to them. We've also had a lot of phone calls from residents, as Jenny has said. I think between us all, we must have had more phone calls than I think we've ever received from residents in years. We have had so many. And I understand that they only need one or two responses, but I think that people are so passionate about this that everybody has wanted to express their views. And Jenny is right that it is a very complicated site, and I had to speak to somebody to take me through it all. It doesn't indicate easily that there are more than one method of giving a response, and because it's so difficult to navigate a site, it caused mass confusion. We are all really concerned not just about the impact on our amenities locally, but also the possibility that should they build there, then the field next door to that, and all of a sudden we're going to have a considerably larger Stafford than the Stafford that Stafford intended it to be, because they will become our residents, and it's something that we have absolutely got to fight at all costs. And I echo the words that Jenny has also made, and on behalf of myself and Anne, thank you very much. So.
Well, what's going to be interesting is to see the response from the County Council to that proposal, because the County Council, I expect, to also have made a response to the South Staff's plan, and I would hope that the County Council would raise transport capacity issues, highway issues, education capacity issues, as well as some of the landscape and environmental considerations as well. So again, keep an eye out when the representations are made available on the South Staff to see what the County Council
has. There was obviously money that will be going forward for education, etc. However, our schools are at capacity. They're not nearly at capacity. We cannot take another child from any of our local schools. And the local developers, with some of the estates that are being built still in that area of town, have agreed to give some provision for primary schools. We don't have secondary school provision. Money going to secondary school provision, and we are absolutely desperate for it. And should anything be built up there, it's just going to be horrendous for any families that move in, trying to find anywhere for their children to be able to go to school. And it's not going to be the responsibility of South Staff. It will be us that will be dealing with that problem.
Only one person speaks in this committee, and at the moment it's me. Thank you. So now Councillor Jenny wants to come back in, because she raised this thing originally.
Just a couple of things. We live on Wildwood, so we know exactly what the problem is. Just past the Co-op on the Canuck Road, that's where the field starts, a farm's field. So it is right bang up to Wildwood Estate, as you know from the map. And it's just totally unacceptable. It really is, like Councillor Phillips says, the infrastructure, etc. But my point is that you mentioned the County Council. Now, I'll come back to Gladman when we went to their planning meeting.
it needs, a lot was left to be desired. Is there any way that you can keep on top of the county and make sure that they do follow it up and help us? Because we didn't seem to get very much help at the time from the county council with the Gladman objection.
Chairman, I could say that perhaps our staffs will be asking the same question of the county councillors. You're in a cleft stick as a county councillor, I expect. As a county councillor here, I'm sure can answer the question.
Yeah. I'm going to stop this particular conversation now because I didn't expect it to go on to this particular time. I will come back with something. Councillor Cross and I smiled, and so did Councillor Winnington, because you're talking about the development at the south of the town. I'm damn sure that a person who lives on Parkside and somebody that represents that area,
yep,
north of the town, knows exactly what's going on in the same sort of situation. That in actual fact, that top end of the town is growing outwards. And that's beginning to get very interesting when you go up to 34. Mm. So I think we've done a lot on this. What I'm going to do now is to call the pages. Right, page 3. We've just talked about that a lot. On page... I'm going to turn the page. On page 4, there is a question I want to ask. And that is about... At the bottom of paragraph 3.5, it says, in addition, the government has introduced changes to permitted development rights affecting town centres, commercial areas, following consultation earlier the year. I mean, what sort of, in a brief, what sort of changes have they done on town centres and commercial areas?
In short, they've... change of use from certain town centre uses and in commercial areas to housing without needing to provide planning permission.
Right, thank you. So page 4, anybody else, any comments there? On to page 5, it says there about the potential garden community. That is well on the way now, isn't it? Meesbrook?
As I said earlier, a decision needs to be made about whether to include a garden community and then if it's included, then where that would be, and that decision will be made and then published without that preferred option.
Right, thank you. Over the page to 6. Right. And Alex did mention this update national planning policy framework that came alongside the National Model Design Code. He's mentioned that. We've worked out on page 6 about 5.5 what the examination, the proposed new plan, meant. So on to page 7. There are other parish councils, aren't there, that's coming into this 5.7. about their neighbourhood plans, more parish councils getting involved.
Yes, so at the moment we've got Doxy, Hoxton and Coton, Yarnfield and Colby's and Swinnerton parishes that are all actively progressing a neighbourhood plan, but they are in very early stages, all of those.
Right. Thank you for that. Okay then, at the bottom of page 7 we start on the implications, finance. And Dee, you got a question there?
It's interesting that you've gone into reserves. I'm wondering how much reserves funds are left. Because with COVID going on, I know we have a big impact with this latest lot yet. We don't know what's going, but so how's that going to be eaten into reserves?
General, right. I think we're talking about planning for your reserves. Yeah. It's not the general reserves of the Borough Council. And it's an interesting question because the planning fees are absorbed into the general budget of the organisation. And I can't answer any more than that. John, yeah.
The reference in here is to a percentage of the planning fee income, because when the fees last rose 3 or 4 years ago, they went up by 20%, but the council has to ring fence that 20% only to be spent on planning. So it can't go into the general budget, and in effect it has to be kept separately and drawn down, and that's what I think is being referred to here.
Right. Okay, Dean. Right. So over onto page 8. Page 9. And over the page onto page 10. Now that's the extent of the local plan, and we thank Alex for his discussion. He said it wasn't going to be a presentation, but it's really been a good question and answer session. Right, then we move now on to item 7B, which is the work programme. And I'll call the pages out. Page 11, anybody got any comments there? You might as well stay there, Alex, we're not going to be that long on this one, I don't think. Page 11, over the page to 12, and I want to draw your attention again to the top of page 12 where it says 5.1, that the work programme is owned by all members of the scrutiny committee. Alright, and we go over the page to 13 is almost a blank page. 14 is our next meeting on the 8th of February. Now, you've got hand up there, Dean.
The next meeting, there's like the rural strategy, high street and markets update. I think we require quite a detailed report on that, what's going on. We're having so many questions asked of us locally about what's happening to the market, from the market traders to the general public, not knowing what's going on. I'm not sure that I know what's going on that well. So a detailed report, please, on what's going on there.
Chair, we did put a statement out under the press release not very long ago, which has made it pretty clear, really. It may be that February is the right time to bring the high street issues to the meeting. It depends on an awful lot of commercial sensitivity and commercial negotiations going on, but assuming that that's so, that meeting would be appropriate. If not, there's nothing suspicious about it, but it may need to be determined.
I mean, obviously, with taking on board the commercial sensitivity graph, then we need to go into a confidential session, if that's the case.
I will say that there's a lot of talk outside, and I've been approached personally and asking what's going to happen to the market, and I gave them the straight answer, I don't know, because it's not my job to say what's going to happen, and it is commercially sensitive, and I do think we should have an item on the next agenda about the market update, high street and market update, even if it is in confidential. So that we, you know, it can be discussed in here, because we had this task and finish when Ralph Cook was chairing this committee on the market, and I do feel, you know, that we ought to, due to the amount of questions that are going on around the town, we ought to be talking about even in this committee, even if we have to keep it confidential. Marnie?
Chairman, I wonder we're here. I know Michelle and Robert
both gave us the information at the last meeting about what was going on
they did.
With the market and with, it feels like this is just a repeated question.
We've been through the whole lot before, and we'll bring it back in February as best we can.
Yeah.
I don't understand what a further update would be between now and the last.
Well, the point is that when somebody asks you what's going to happen to the market, and you stand there as chairman of the committee saying, I don't know, because I don't divulge commercial interest in things, it's not my job.
I understand that.
But the point about it is...
The market is there.
Yeah.
It's continuing.
But the thing to say to you is that this is a committee where these items should be discussed. And even if we have to go into confidentiality session, then we should be talking about it. All right? And we come to, and the cabinet member can come to an agreement as to what they say outside the meeting. I mean, there are things on here, the future items, like the gateway. We need to have something back on the gateway now when the government is in this sort of quandary about HS2. Ought to know exactly what it's going to affect, because that's a very important area, that gateway. And I know that one or two councillors are still muttering about the section 106 money, that these things need discussion, even if we have to take them into confidential session. Alright, so I do feel, you know, that these things do need to be talked about. Especially, there's a lot of interest in the town about the high street and the market. A lot of interest. And when
I sincerely hope you'll be going out to the public displays in the not too distant future about the whole of the future of the high street.
Yeah.
It's not something we're trying to hold back on. We're very anxious to get.
No, and I think it's
out into the public arena.
Yeah, and I think
it's a wonderful good news story.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not blocking it because it's a good news story. I'm just saying it's something that needs done. Okay then. Now we've come to the last page. Mark Winnington.
Yes. Thanks, Chair. This committee is actually probably the most exciting scrutiny committee there is, because there's so this committee is probably the most exciting one there is, because there's so much going on over the next 2 years. The High Street's one, I understand, is sort of, there's a time limit on delivery.
Yes, 2024.
And we've just heard that we're going through options and policies on planning. Is there any merit in having standing items, particularly around those two issues, because they are so important for the town as we go forwards? And I think we need an update, if nothing else.
At every meeting.
Yeah.
Right, councillor. I always get councillor D. I'll say that she agrees with you. So it's a standard. It's a standard to be a standard item on the agenda. Then. All right. That's what does everybody agree on that?
Yeah.
Okay. Right, well, we've come to the end of the meeting, and I thank you for your attendance. I honestly didn't think that we would go on until 10 to 8. However, as indicated earlier, I'm asking you to partake of mince pies and a drink. There's wine and orange juice, and of course there's coffee outside. And if you'd like to help yourselves there, there's a number of boxes of mince pies there, because I've always believed in people should have a selection, and of course there is a pack there of the co-op.
Freedom of choice.
They came out as the best provider after Morrison's.
Yeah.
I mean the best mince pies.
The little ones are very nice.
And Little came higher. Mark's came last.
Really?
Yeah.
Just close
sorry?
Meeting. Can you just
close the just meeting? About
close
the meeting?
Yeah, Andrew says, for goodness sake, let's close the meeting. Yeah.